Welcome to episode 146 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live October 4th, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, we decided to take a little bit of a break from Office 365 information protection and make our way into Azure and spend some time discussing Azure Resource Manager templates. So we're going to swing over into Azure land. And we did, one of our sponsors, ShareGate. We got to mention quick book from them too before we dive into our topic, because once we get going on a topic, we might never stop. They have this new checklist out, the Ultimate Azure Cost Optimization Checklist for Cloud Teams. So just a checklist, nice little book they released that is free out there with tips, tricks, checklists for saving costs. So it kind of goes along with one of their products they have out there, their ShareGate Overcast, that's all about cost savings in Azure. So wanted to give them a quick shout out, thank them for sponsoring, tell you guys to go check out this checklist if you're doing Azure and want to do some cost savings. And with that, we'll let Scott talk about JSON templates. I'm done. I did my part.
Excellent. Well, it's always nice doing business with you, Ben.
Hey, I aim to please.
Yeah. So figured it'd be fun today, like you said, to maybe not talk about Office 365 once again, because that just grinds on you after a while. And let's talk a little bit about Azure Resource Manager templates and kind of what's going on over in infrastructure as code land, all the fun stuff that's over there. So a good change of pace.
Yeah. So this is all about IT pros learning how to write JSON, which just makes my skin crawl sometimes.
I don't think this is about,
you gotta do it,
IT pros. This is about those that want to automate and have more resilient deployments within Azure. So if you've ever been in AWS and you've really liked CloudFormation and some of the niceties that come along with infrastructure as code, this is kind of Microsoft's way to say, hey, let's do infrastructure as code or declarative deployments over in Azure land. So when I say declarative deployment, I mean, we're going to make a declaration. There's going to be a configuration file or a document that we put together that says, I declare this to be my stuff, versus an imperative deployment where maybe you go in and you either write your own client against maybe the REST APIs, or you use something that's already wrapped around an SDK like PowerShell or the CLI, and you kind of go line by line and imperatively say, I would like to do this, then I would like to do this, then I would like to do this, then I would like to do this. And you've got to be very mindful of that ordering versus just saying, here's all my stuff, now go do it for me, right? Have this API surface in Azure Resource Manager, figure out a bunch of stuff and push it out as it kind of sees fit, or as you've said, it needs to go out.
Yes. So for those people listening, in case you are new to this, ARM is Azure Resource Manager, and we may swap around between those back and forth. So ARM template, Azure Resource Manager template. It's one of those things, I was sitting here thinking about it, it's easy to see when you're looking at a slide or when you're looking at notes with it. But if you're just listening and all of a sudden we start flipping back and forth, those are interchangeable. ARM is your acronym for your Azure Resource Manager.
Yes and no.
In a way.
You'll never see it called ARM in the documentation because there's another company called ARM. You know, like the company that makes CPUs and things like that. Like, we've all heard about ARM CPUs. You know, they power our phones and they're starting to power laptops. Yes. and things like that now. So because there is a company called ARM, there's existing copyrights and trademarks and all sorts of things that go on there. So I will try and be mindful and not call them ARM templates. I'll try and refer to them just as templates or as resource manager templates.
All right. Sounds good. Good to know. I had not thought about that before.
That's the reason you never see ARM in any of Microsoft's documentation, because ARM is a company. It is not a template.
Got it. Kind of like, I did not realize this the other day, kind of like Ignite. It has to be MS Ignite because Microsoft does not own the Ignite trademark.
Yes, this is true as well. So all sorts of fun things in,
yes,
marketing and branding land.
Everyone is always looking to save time in their day, just like moving to the cloud can save you from the mundane tasks of patching, updating, and maintaining servers. Sanebox can save you from the mundane and time-consuming task of managing your email. Samebox works with your existing email configuration to make your mailbox awesome. It may be using Sane Black Hole to avoid mailing and cold sales emails, or Sane Reminders to automatically remind you when you need to follow up on an email. You can even snooze an email, yeah, just like that pesky alarm clock in the morning, to defer or to de-emphasize an email that doesn't need your immediate attention. So what are you waiting for? There's nothing to install, nothing to learn. Just go to sanebox.com/allthings. That's sanebox.com/allthings to get 2 weeks free and a $25 credit. Okay, so back to these Azure Resource Manager. I'll try to be good too. Azure Resource Manager templates. You said they're infrastructure is code. What does that mean? Or like people that haven't ever even seen these before?
So there's a few things that happen here. You know, typically when, you know, I think when we say code, people might think of maybe JavaScript or C Sharp or Java, whatever Python, you know, whatever thing they happen to be into. So when I say code and infrastructure as code in context for these templates, really what I'm talking about is a JSON document. So JSON is JavaScript object notation. It is a way for us just to write text files where name value pairs are grouped in logical ways, right? We have kind of elements or collections of elements. Maybe we have arrays, things like that inside of them. So it feels a little bit like some of the terminology comes across as, hey, I'm a programmer now, because we're going to talk about things like maybe arrays. We'll talk about functions. We'll talk about logical expressions and operators and conditionals, all sorts of things like that. But all of those are going to be defined within this template. So that's kind of the first part is when I say code, really, we're talking about writing a text file and a JSON document that's going to help us make these declarations and kind of have our expressions and transformations and things we want inside of it. The other thing to keep in the back of your head is when I say infrastructure as code, I think one of the biggest mistakes a lot of organizations and individuals make when they get started with this stuff is they say, well, now it's not code. It is just a text document. So I'm going to keep that on my desktop, or it's going to sit over here in this silo where I'm the only person who has access to it. And that's not the intent. You should treat these things as code. They're going to be artifacts in your environment, and they should be managed like any other artifact or piece of code within your organization. So if you're maybe an IT pro and you've never touched a source code management system or repository like an SVN, like Git or things like that, and your organization uses that, hey, great opportunity to get on board and potentially learn some better ways to manage the life cycle of these and really treat them as artifacts that support your overall environment and your overall estate or systems, whatever they are.
Yeah, I like that part you said about the source code repositories, because I think especially coming from kind of that IT pro side of land, that's something that us as IT pros need to get more and more familiar with. I have started using it more even for PowerShell scripts and integration with things like Azure Automation. But yeah, the templates, you talk about here even CI/CD integration, being able to track those changes, because as you create these templates too and deploy these resources, I know developers always laugh about self-documenting code, but this kind of even self-documents maybe some of your changes or your base hardware configurations. These templates really can be a form of documentation of what your hardware even looks like or your server specs and all of that, and something you may want other people to get to, especially if you're using these two to maybe create development environments in Azure and you want to be able to share it with your entire company so everybody's dev machines are built the same way. There's a lot of reasons for putting this in source control and controlling versions and checking in and checking out and CI/CD and all of that.
There's some additive benefit here. Even if you're a single individual, it's not just about you. It's about being able to carry things forward and be able to kind of go back and forward in time and see what you did. How'd you make those decisions? Because one of the things that's going to happen is as you just get started with templates, you're going to learn different things as you're going through and kind of how to grow into them. And as you grow into them and learn new stuff, you're going to want to go back and see how you did it in the past and just be able to manage it in a a different or a better way. So I think that is a super critical skill. Like if, like I said, if you don't know what GitHub is today, there's some great little videos and classes. You know, you go out on YouTube, there's some great stuff from GitHub themselves. MS Learn has stuff, AWS, Google has stuff on it, and how to wrap your head around this and really get behind some of these principles and kind of guiding lights that we have out there.
And then once you learn GitHub, you can start updating documentation on docs.microsoft.com, since that's all powered by GitHub.
Yeah, or you can just click the edit button and live your best life as you can over there.
Yeah. Anyway, so as people start going with JSON, I've looked at it. If I just look at a JSON file that defines a whole server, initial glance, it confuses me. It looks like a whole mass of squiggly brackets and square brackets and parentheses and commas and colons and quotes and all of that. Are there some basics on how someone that's maybe even never looked at JSON before can get started, some guidelines, guiding principles? How would you recommend people even get started with that?
A few things there. I think you have to keep in the back of your head the whole time you're working with JSON what it actually is. So there's a couple of things. It is a data interexchange format. So if you're familiar with like XML or EDI, things like that, you know, we have these messaging formats. This is just another one. So it's just a way for us to put data into a file, right? Then that's all we're doing. And with JSON specifically, it's really based on just two types of data structures or really two big things going on. So it is name value pairs. So I have name and then I have a value, or it's a collection of name value pairs. So rather than having a single name and a single value, I have multiple names and multiple values put together. So that's where a lot of the brackets and squirrely braces and things like that come together. When you're getting started with, you know, some of these, I recommend you kind of start small. But if you're maybe looking at an example that's out there, like say you went out to the quick start templates and you saw this massive 500 line arm script and you're like, I don't know what's going on, rely on some tools to help you out there. So you have things like JSON linters. So linters can kind of help you validate and make sure all your brackets and your commas and your squirrely braces and things like that are in the right place. And you also have things like outliners that can help you out. So maybe being able to like jump around a document based on parameters or variables or that big resource that you deployed and maybe a child resource that's underneath it. So you'll have to find maybe an IDE that can help you out there. So an integrated development environment. Personally, I'm a big fan of VS Code when it comes to ARM templates. So Microsoft, and not just Microsoft, but a bunch of other folks in the community as well, have written extensions that can help you out a bunch there. Like Microsoft has their official Azure Resource Manager tools that gives you things like IntelliSense. It gives you light linting for your ARM templates. It gives you outlining. There's visualization extensions, and you'll get that native integration with all your source control tooling like Git and things like that. If you don't like that, maybe Visual Studio, maybe you go to Sublime or Notepad++, things like that. Maybe not as rich with like an extension ecosystem to make it a little bit better for you. Just don't be doing Notepad, right? Like if you go into Notepad and your first inclination is I'm going to write an ARM template from scratch and I'm going to just start with an open squirrely brace and a closed squirrely brace, you're doing it wrong. Like there's other tools out there that are going to be able to help you a whole bunch.
Yes. My favorite is Visual Studio Code as well. Not just for ARM templates, but I even use it as just my default text editor now on my computer. So that PowerShell, if you haven't gone and checked out VS Code, go give that a try. Go grab a bunch of those extensions. With those extensions, does it even pull down? Because obviously some of this too is unique to different Azure resources. With the Microsoft one for the templates, does it even pull in with that IntelliSense and the IntelliType and all of that, pull in some of those Azure specific aspects to it? Or is it just kind of the basic highlighting, opening and closing, squiggly brackets, all of that that it does for you?
I'll put a link in the show notes. There's an extension called Azure Resource Manager Tools. If you go ahead and install that, it brings not just basic highlighting, because it's just a JSON file, so it'll have that anyway, but it actually brings detection based on things like the resource manager schema that you're going to validate against. It brings IntelliSense for a bunch of your expressions and kind of as you write functions out. So things like built-in functions, you'll be able to kind of like do go to definition kind of thing. So, you know, you're way down in line 498 of that 500 line template, and it's talking about a resource that's actually up on line 252. You don't have to know that. You can just actually right click and say, go to that resource, and you know, it'll take you right over there and flip and flop you around where you need to be, which is super helpful.
Nice. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. All right. So kind of tools to get started writing these templates, some of the other formatting, extensions, IDEs to use for all of those. Where do you go from there?
Well, I think there's a couple of places that you can potentially go from there and start maybe thinking about your life a little bit. So there's getting started with templates, and there's a bunch of different ways to go ahead and maybe think about doing this. Microsoft maintains a repository called the Quick Start Templates. It's out on GitHub. There are hundreds and hundreds of examples out there. That experience is actually baked into the Azure portal as well with the Monaco editor and things like that. So one of the things you can do is hop right over to GitHub and maybe search for an example template that's out there. And every single one of those templates is going to have this thing called a deploy to Azure button. You click that button and it's going to open up the custom deployment blade and the deployment service inside of the Azure portal. And then you can edit the template just in a web browser, kind of see what's going on, maybe get your feet wet with it that way and start out. The other thing that you can do is go and create some resources. So if you've already got some stuff that's out there, let's say you have an existing virtual machine and you've only got one of them and you'd really like to find a way to automate that deployment and make it idempotent. You know, I want to have this template and this thing that I can run time and time again, and it always operates in the same way. You can actually go to existing resources in the Azure portal and anything you've already deployed. And there is a template exporting function on, it starts at the resource group scope and then every resource that sits underneath it as well. It won't exactly give you the nicest template. Like, it's not going to follow best practices or things like that, because it's just based on an export straight from those resource manager APIs. But if you do have existing stuff out there, it's a good way to kind of see, you know, maybe having a little bit of a hint as a way to how you might get started with a template yourself.
Got it. Well, and another way you can do this too is, even if you don't have a resource, but you want to build one or you kind of know what you want, you can go through the whole GUI and build it out, selecting your drives and network settings and VM size and all of that. And then the last step before you deploy it in the GUI, I believe you also still have that, like, export the ARM template for whatever you've just clicked through, right? So you can also grab that whole template that way?
In some of the create experiences, that does exist. So if you think about the Azure portal and creating a new resource, and you kind of go through that next deployment experience.
Yep.
In the background, what it's doing is it's building an ARM template, an Azure Resource Manager template on the fly, and it's actually submitting that as a deployment to that Resource Manager API surface for you. So the portal is effectively a Resource Manager template expression generator.
It's a visual IDE.
Yes.
Instead of a code-based IDE.
There we go.
I just overly simplified it.
It's a low code solution. You know, it's kind of like shortcuts on iOS.
No code. This is no code, right? Our no code solution for creating ARM templates?
Kind of, sort of. Now, here's the thing, right? Like I said, you go ahead and you use those templates. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, because they are based on automated API stuff. So you might have to pull it back a step and maybe get yourself into template land and start making edits to existing templates. I don't think you ever start from a bare, empty template. You always kind of grab an example from the quick starts, or you start with a resource you've already created, things like that. And that's where it becomes helpful understanding some of the things that drive template schema and really how these things are structured, so that you can not necessarily write them from scratch, but go back and continue to augment and improve existing templates.
Got it. And that makes sense. I mean, when I've done this too, it is, I have never just started from a blank text file and started writing this. I've always gone out and grabbed, like you said, something that's already out there and just made modifications, made tweaks, made additions, starting from scratch, which is, that just doesn't even sound like fun to me.
No, it is not fun. we'll leave it at that.
All right. I'm going through our whole process now. Now we've deployed them, source control. We've talked about how to get those from existing resources or from resources you're clicking through. What else do people need to know as it relates to ARM templates? I guess, so one thing is, we've talked about this a lot as infrastructure as code, but there's a lot of other things when you go into the whole IaaS, PaaS, SaaS. Does this apply to just the infrastructure as code, or does this apply to just about any resource that you have out there in Azure that you may want to deploy? Is everything ARM-based going into even some of the, I don't know, when you're spinning up, let's say like a new Azure automation resource and you want that, granted there's not a lot of configuration options there, but you want it configured a certain way, can you do ARM templates for everything?
Loaded question. So
okay, so maybe not everything.
I just want to make sure that we're careful about terminology. So when we think about, let's go back to that imperative declarative thing. So
okay,
you have templates, you know, we have these declarative files. You also have REST APIs, you have SDKs, you have CLI tooling like PowerShell and,
yep,
and the Azure CLI. And then you also have the Azure portal. All of those things, they all get submitted to the same endpoint. So there's the Azure Resource Manager management service, kind of the API plane that really drives and sits on the back end and pushes all this stuff through. So what happens is, being that there's one API to drive it, that API is kind of the most raw way to interact with things. So sometimes we have to wait for the tooling to catch up with the API. So that's why sometimes you see a brand new service comes out, like Frontdoor came out over the last year. And Frontdoor, yep, when it first came out, could only be managed through PowerShell. It wasn't available in the CLI. Well, that was because nobody had got around to updating the CLI tooling yet with all the stuff for Frontdoor. And the same kind of thing happens with templates as well. The majority of stuff can be done in a template. Yes, absolutely. All good, ready to go. Not everything can be, though. I think that's kind of one of those misnomers, is we're going to live this great declarative life. For the most part, yes, you will. But I think you're always going to run into kind of rough edges where there are going to be things that you want to do that can only be done in PowerShell or only be done in the CLI, and some other stuff can be done in the template. So usually what I recommend is, let's make as many things as we can declarative, right? If I can put it in a template and that supports kind of my software development lifecycle and kind of how I'm pushing things through, then I want all that stuff in a template. And you just have to recognize that maybe everything can't go in there. And when it can't go in there, it's going to go into some other tool. And let's be honest, when you deploy a template, usually when you get started, you're just going to be doing it through the Azure portal. But realistically, what you're doing is, when you're submitting these templates to the API surface, you're doing that with tools like PowerShell or like the CLI anyway. So it's not that bad to say, hey, maybe we're going to have a script that creates the things I need to create imperatively, and then it submits my template at the very end to go ahead and execute my deployment.
Got it. Everyone on your team is unique. So is SkillMeUp.com. Only SkillMeUp provides the bridge from fundamentals to certification paths to advanced skills to accelerate digital transformation with one subscription and five ways to learn. Start your free pilot today and supercharge your IT and Microsoft Azure skills by visiting skillmeup.com/pilot or click the link in the show notes below. So because I am an Azure Automation junkie, you could literally create all of this in Azure Automation and mix in then PowerShell with ARM template deployments and have some type of automated script that you would run from something like Azure Automation, or maybe just give it to your developers to run to go kind of mix and match between all these different things that you need to get a complete automated deployment.
Absolutely. So the possibility is there. It's just you have to recognize the way some of these services work, or really the way on the back end the resource providers have been executed. So like, let's take a step back. You're familiar with managed instance, right?
Yep.
Azure SQL managed instance. All right. So you can deploy managed instance through an ARM template. You can do it through PowerShell, or you can do it through the CLI. And then you can certainly make updates to it as well through all of those methods. So one of the principles of an ARM template is that your deployments, like anytime you submit a deployment to the API surface, it should be idempotent. What I mean there is if I take the template and I run it once and that template creates that MI instance for me, if I run the same template again with the same parameters and all the things that happen against, and it, basically I run it exactly the same way, it shouldn't affect any change, or it should come out exactly the same way every single time, right? That's kind of a core principle of it. Well,
right.
The MI team, when they built their resource provider, they broke that kind of contract of idempotence within their resource provider specifically. So if you're using ARM templates with SQL MI, it actually bombs out and it says, hey, there's an existing MI resource here, so I can't do anything. But that's not the way a template is supposed to work. A template is supposed to say, oh, there's already a resource here, and because I used all the same parameters and variables and things like that, it just matches and it knows it's there and gets ready to move on to the next step. So sometimes there are portions of product teams that break those contracts along the way. And then we call them out on things like user voice and kind of some of the communities that are out there for partners and customers to interact with Microsoft, and they get their stuff together and they fix it over time. But there's all sorts of these kind of practical examples of services that align out there that don't exactly behave the way they should. It's not because the resource manager templates are doing something bad. It's because some implementation of a resource provider is a little bit off because maybe that product team didn't actually know
Got it.
Where they were supposed to line up.
Yeah. So one thing you said that I forgot to ask you about that I wanted to call out too is you mentioned making updates to resources. So if I have a template, let's say I have an ARM template, I've created a server using like a D3 instance, and I want to resize this from a D3 to a D4, can I go in, change my template from specifying that I want a D3 instance to a D4 instance and redeploy it to update my existing resource? Maybe it's to add another network card. Can ARM templates be used to then kind of go in and make updates and changes to these VMs rather than like creating new ones or doing it with scripting, that type of stuff?
They're pretty extensible. So it's going to be one of those, it depends, because it does depend on the resource provider and what they support along the way.
Well, kind of like we mentioned before and how it's been implemented.
Out of the gate, yes, you can always take an existing template. So say you deployed a VM and you want to add a new NIC or you want to add a new disk, something like that.
Yep.
You can affect the change within that existing resource by just creating a new template and saying, add a NIC, add a disk, you know, add this configuration, add this subnet to a VNet, whatever it happens to be along the way. Once you're outside of adding a new resource, when you're kind of changing resource configuration like that, it really is dependent on the resource provider and what they're going to support. Because sometimes you want more control over things like that. Like if I think about a resize operation, like, you know, going between one instance size to another, sure, yep, like that would be one way to do it would be a template, but it's probably not the best way because there's all sorts of things. Like, what if that VM's on? Well, I probably want to shut it down first, right? I want to shut it down gracefully so I can make sure that I'm not causing inconsistencies in my applications or my disks or things like that. So some tasks suit themselves a little bit better to things like scripting over doing a template. So maybe for something like that, you say, hey, let's go ahead and do our resize operation inside of a script. But now that I've done my resize, you know what? I remember we deployed this thing through a template. And in our template, we have an array of parameters that baked in the allowable set of VM sizes. So we better go back and update our template just so the next time we deploy a new one of these VMs, it actually aligns with what our environment is today.
Perfect. Sounds good. Well, I think that hopefully gives a good overview of ARM templates.
I think it definitely scratches the surface. There's all sorts of other stuff to talk about, right? Like the actual schema and what goes into it and all the bits and bobs and pieces that are in there.
We could do a part two of ARM templates.
Oh, we could. We're just so good at part one, part twos.
Or we just do part ones and then we decide we don't want to talk about it again and just don't do the rest of the parts. No, we'll come back to unified labels and other stuff at some point in time. It's getting close to Ignite too. We're going to have to take a break from part ones and part twos to do all our Ignite stuff.
That's coming up as well.
Yeah. Time to go get our decks done, Scott. We've got some sessions to prepare for at Ignite this year.
With that being said, let's go create some decks for Ignite.
Go create more decks. All right. Perfect. Well, thanks, Scott. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.